This is Juno Afternoon. Ganesh Chish for joining us. I'm Rhonda McBride. During celebration this year, you might have noticed as Native dance groups took the stage, almost without fail, performers used just about every opportunity to speak in their native language. And we heard voices in Tlingit, Haida, Tsimshian, both young and old, and words of appreciation for the language teachers and culture bearers. And I'd like our guest today to respond to that, Hune Lance Twitchell, a professor of native language at the University of Alaska Southeast, and Corinne Silkaitis, Dean of Arts and Sciences at the university. And we're here to talk about a change in the university's native language program that removes the final barrier to learning, the cost. And also joining us in the conversation, we have Claire Sprimple from the KTOO News Department. But first, you know, I want to start with you, Hune. What was your reaction to what you saw at Celebration this year?
I was so happy to hear our languages at Celebration and to see people gathering together, singing and dancing. One of our elders, his name is Tlotuish Herman Davis, and he likes to use this phrase, which is, it's echoing back to us. And it's just really a wonderful thought to think about. Someone who's in their late 80s, perhaps, and then has grown up watching a language get into increasing trouble and to decline, and then for him to be a witness to seeing it begin to shift directions, which is, I think, is what we've been witnessing over the past decade or more, is an increase in the number of speakers and an increase in the amount of use of the languages.
So, Karen, I'd like to go to you and just ask you to react, kind of coming in new to the job of dean in sciences, in the midst of this sort of cultural renaissance. What's that like?
Ganesh Chish, thank you for inviting that question. As somebody new to Juno and somebody new to Alaska, it's been a wonderful time of learning for me as dean of arts and sciences at UAS. And I'm grateful, I would say, grateful to all of these wonderful people for teaching me about this wonderful place that I'm now calling my home, and the people who have resided here for time immemorial. And I feel very grateful to live on this land of the Akwan. And I've told Kune that I will be taking beginning Tlingit this fall. I'm signing up for one of these classes that we're going to be talking about very shortly. And I'm really excited to start my own journey learning an Alaska Native language. And one of the things that really struck me, and I did attend, I attended everything at Celebration, and just being enveloped by knowledge bearers, by culture bearers, and witnessing for myself the beautiful generosity that was shared with me, I felt very included. I felt very welcomed. I felt very grateful is how I felt. And I as somebody who's learned languages throughout my life, right? And the language I know best is Spanish. And if somebody would have said to me, there are only a couple of Spanish speakers left, and that's it, Spanish is dying, I can't even comprehend what that would be like for me. As people in my own family speak Spanish as as their language, right, or Portuguese, and I have family who are from Portugal. I can't even imagine what that would be like for me, what that would feel like for me. And now to come to Alaska and have people say to me, there are only a few birth speakers left. So this has been so important to me to learn and listen to Hune. And how important this is for us, language revitalization.
And to have a course that anyone can take free of charge, that's amazing.
Yeah. Can you guys talk about how that came together? What's this course going to be like?
Yeah.
Sure. I'm actually going to give that to Hune because it was his dream. This has been his dream for a long time.
Ganesh Chish. Well, I guess there's history here. So going back to Chancellor John Pugh, and he talked to me about this idea of a MOOC, like a massive open online course. And he said, what if we tried something like that? And we talked about it, and then through a partnership with Outer Coast and Sitka and Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, we ran one, like, actually year one of the pandemic, and we just tried it, and we put the word out, and we had over 600 people sign up and want to take it. And the largest class we had was 150, and it just kind of was mind-blowing to think, well, we might have fewer than 40 speakers left, but we've got 150 people walking in the door. And then Chancellor Rick Caulfield, we talked about a zero credit option, saying, well, what if people didn't want the college credit? And then when we put that through, there was still a small fee associated with it. And then we just kept talking. We kept saying, Indigenous peoples did not choose to be in this situation. We didn't put ourselves in this situation. Our language was banished. It was prohibited. It was made illegal. We were tortured and abused and all kinds of things to get us to stop speaking. So why should we have to pay to learn our own language, especially if we're finding effective ways to really get people started to become a speaker? And so under the leadership of Chancellor Karen Carey and Dean Karen Silkaitis, I just kept saying, what's it going to take? Where are we going to – just give me a number. Give me an idea, and let's just get rid of all the money. So we just say, what if we just took the doors off the Klan house and just let people walk in? And I want to give a lot of credit to Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, to Rosita Worrell and to Lee Cadinger, who just kept saying, no, we got to take it off. No minimal fees, no anything. So folks can sign up for a zero credit option. And it's important to know, like, if you just want to learn the language, you don't have to pay. And we're going to figure out what that looks like in terms of numbers of people who are all learning at the same time. We might overwhelm ourselves, but it's a way to get, I think, to a safer spot. But we do offer certificates and degree options, which is going to include down the road a Master of Arts in Teaching Indigenous Languages. And so this zero credit option might not always apply to those things. So just make sure if you're interested in learning, you know which kind of – are you going to take the four-credit path or the non-credit path? And then we're just really excited to see what it's going to happen. I think it's going to be medicinal. I think it's going to be it's going to alter the course of the way things are going, and it's really exciting.
So when does it start, and have people started signing up? Do you have to?
Well, it starts in the fall. So if you look up on the UAS website for courses, you have they're called AKL is what you would look for in the course, and those are our language courses. And then there's a zero credit option, which is AKLA. So they'll be taught at the same time. So you'll be in the same class as folks who are getting the credit, but you won't receive a grade. And also for some people, it's so intimidating to come in and to learn an Indigenous language. There's a lot of trauma involved with that. There's a lot of fear involved with that. So for some people, they might feel better if they didn't have a grade. You know, but some of the things that we're going to sort of work with folks on is what does it mean to be at certain levels as speakers, and how do we help people continue to progress? And really pushing back on, for a while there was kind of this idea floating around that if people didn't pay for it, they wouldn't value it. But I think that's an untested theory, and I think that comes from some things that are outside of the way that we typically want to do things, which is to make it available, to make it safe to learn, safe to speak, and also to engage in conversations of what does it mean to learn and use an Indigenous language? What does it mean to bring it back to daily use? And sometimes there's going to be some bumps in the road. There's going to be some people that are upset, but we're going to really try and engage in a lot of conversations around those things that are creating those feelings and see what we can do to keep folks at ease, to keep it fun, even though it's challenging, and to keep people going.
Has this been done before? Is this a potential model for other places and other universities?
I
think it is.
Oh, go ahead.
I think it is a great model. I think that we are modeling access. And part of my, you know, when you think about diversity or equity and inclusion work, I think people forget the word, access in DEI work. And I think access is a key component to your sort of overall inclusion and equity strategy. And you have to create access, you have to open doors, you have to bring seats to tables. And I think the way to do that is to create more access. And I think creating free curriculum is a way to create more access for people. And to answer your, also your question about people signing up, I have received some great emails already. There is a young woman who emailed me yesterday from the Lower 48 who said, I just want to let you know, I want to thank you. I'm signing up for a non-credit course to learn a language that my grandmother spoke.
Wow. So can you guys tell me why now? Where are we in this moment of you've been building language access and language learning for a long time. Why this moment for this to happen and what's coming next?
Yeah, well, I think if you're on the side of languages that are really trying to keep them at a safe space and bring them to a safe space, I think you're always looking for what comes next, because we just had a language gathering this week, and I would say there's probably fewer than 10 master-level BRRR speakers who can do kind of all of the things in Tlingit, and then they can translate anything, and they could say anything. And so just knowing the realities of our language continuing to go through a decline, we're trying to brace ourselves for this time when a lot of our elders, we've been watching them leave us and have been very scared about what happens next. And so for me, it's trying to sort of figure out what's going to be the series of things that we can put in motion that'll get us to a point where we don't know everybody who can speak Tlingit, where we just hear it more in the grocery stores, in the post office, in the community, walking around, and that it would be more common for us to hear it. So until our languages are in a safe space, we're going to continue to think of what the next moves can be. And some of those moves are, you know, as we put kids through education, how do we make sure that they continue to have people who will challenge them in their language learning journeys? And some of that is going to be just continuing to analyze how education works, because education was a vehicle of oppression and genocide and assimilation. So our goal is to transform it into a vehicle of opportunity and equity and healing, which is, it's not easy to do because not everybody sees things the same way.
Hune, I have a quick question to ask here. What are the languages that will be taught this fall?
We'll be offering Tlingit, we'll be offering Smelgech, the Tsimshian language, and we'll be offering Khatkil, the Haida language. So all three languages of Southeast Alaska. We are in talks with folks about the Eyak language and seeing if we can include that language in our programming, and I'm hoping that we're able to build that in the near future.
And so this isn't the only update. I think there's some changes on the teaching side as well. What else is coming in the language department?
Well, we're going to propose a Master of Arts in Teaching Alaska Native Languages. I'm in talks with folks at the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development to say, is there a future in Alaska where every student who graduates high school takes at least one semester of an Alaska Native language? And then are there ways to ensure that every school in Alaska has an Alaska Native language teacher? And so, again, one of the things that we're trying to do is to not be some optional thing or some thing that's sort of not part of the main source of the curriculum. Like if there's a curriculum that exists and that there's standards, then I think Indigenous peoples and their languages should be part of those standards. And so, again, you just keep knocking on the door until it starts to resemble equity. And it's moving in that direction. It's still a long ways off, but it is going that way.
Corinne?
Yeah, yes.
Is there anything you wanted to add to that, Karen?
No, I agree with everything that Hune said. And I'm also, I think as dean, one of my main jobs is to support faculty. And I think what I've been able to do this year is find ways to say yes. I think, you know, one of the first times you interviewed me, you asked me about being a theater artist in Chicago and what I can bring to this equation. And one of the things I can bring is one of our deep traditions in Chicago is a yes and mentality. And I've been able to do that this year as a good partner and team player to Hune, is to say yes and what's next, right? And I feel like that's how I've been able to help.
You know, I want to bring up a little sidebar into this, because this year the Juneau School District launched a program through the JAM, Juneau Alaska Music Matters program, where children were taught violin with the instruction completely in Tlingit. What do you think about that? Because I, from what I've seen, I went to one of the assemblies and the kids did so well. I mean, you would hardly have known that they would have had any problem learning all in Tlingit.
Yeah, and so I've been involved with that with Gach Ansan, Lori Hagee, and George Hawley, and Shanwa Dekotney Brown, and Kuchiek, Robbie Littlefield, and Kunak, Fred White. And so we kind of assembled a team of folks, and there's a few other music teachers in the community. Like, everyone's been just really amazing to work with. It kind of goes back, I think, a few years ago. We had a class at UAS where we said, what if we just got teachers in the room and started teaching them some Tlingit, but with the intention of saying, how can you use Tlingit in what you teach? And so one of those teachers was very responsive and said, well, what if we started teaching music through Tlingit? And so we kind of brainstormed last summer, and we said, okay, well, I think we can do this. And we have a team of folks. Jin Kasei, Rose Nat Kong is teaching at Sit Iti Shanach, Glacier Valley. And so with the team that we had, we were able to just gradually implement more and more of the language. We had to name a bunch of parts of the violin. And the violin already had a name from long ago. It's called The One That Creaks. And so we were able to sort of continue with these. And it's really fun to think about how the Tlingit language thinks about things. And then one of the questions was, well, what about teaching something through the language, and then the language becomes a medium, which was really fascinating, because that's something they did in Hawaii and with Ojibwe and Mohawk, a lot of languages that have begun to reverse their trend of losing their language did so because they kept looking for ways to use their language as the mode of communication.
But this is particularly beautiful, I think, that the children did this so naturally, it seems like. There was no pain, it seemed like. And in learning what, as an adult, I consider a very difficult language to learn.
Yeah, I mean, well, everyone has their own language journey. And for some kids, I think they start faster and then sort of slow down. And adults usually start slower and then kind of speed up. And so it's a different trajectory. And so sometimes I push back a little bit on the idea that it would have been so much easier when I was a child. And there is some truth to that. But also, like, everybody can and should do it. And we see a kid who doesn't know any Tlingit, and then we see them 3 months later, and they can respond to an awful lot of things that we say to them. And it just gives you a lot of hope.
Hune, you brought up the idea of how a language thinks. And I hate to put you on the spot, but do you have a word or a phrase that you could tell us about that's one of your favorite ways of the language thinking? Or
well, we talk about some things, like an elder once told me, gen has ausane ach gen tu adiye, like, they've already prepared this path for us. And so it was really comforting, because a lot of the work that we're trying to do, we get intimidated and we get worried. But then if they start telling us things like that, it feels like we're sort of doing this thing that our ancestors have prepared us for and have prepared. And then another neat one, I think, goes to Kahtakuwuhin, which is the name of a school in Juneau that used to have another name. And as we sort of start transitioning to using Tlingit names and then restoring Tlingit names, it opens the door for thinking about some things differently. So in Tlingit, calm, still water is very linked to peace and calmness, and rough and turbulent water is linked to war and chaos. And so if you took some water out of a river that runs from a glacier and you put it in a clear container and just set it on a table, you'd see all this murkiness in it, the silt and everything else. And if you just left it there long enough for the particles to settle, it'd say, Yahin kau daqu, the water has settled clear. And then there's a phrase linked to that, which is, let your mind and your spirit and your feelings be like water that has settled clear. And so for me, those things are important, because sometimes in doing language work, you get some pushback. Some of that, a lot of that pushback is fueled by racism, but some of that pushback is fueled by fear and other things, control. But then as you sort of learn these phrases that help keep you at peace, it really helps you to spread this idea that we can do this, we should do this, and we can do this together.
Thank you.
Do you think that when you have more and more people having access to the language, that you kind of reach this saturation point that you need to really give the language a boost? And do you think that these classes, which people can take online for free, might do that?
I think it's a step. And I think we'll always continually be looking for more shifts. Like, could a restaurant in Juneau say, we're giving 10% discounts for Tlingit speakers tonight, and we're hoping our restaurant is all in Tlingit tonight? Or can I order coffee in Tlingit? Can I use my Tlingit name when I go order food? And can, you know, there's, I remember I used to go to one checkout at a grocery store. There was one person I always looked for who was running the cash register because she spoke Tlingit, and I could talk to her in Tlingit while I was checking out for my groceries. And so I think it's going to reach a point where we'll look back, where we'll say, you remember how rare it was when we didn't speak, to hear Tlingit? You remember when hardly anybody knew Tlingit? And then I think my hope is we look back at that and say, what a strange time that was, and I'm glad that we're in a different moment. So I think it's going to contribute to it. And I think there's a number of other things that are going to happen at the same time.
But years ago, we didn't see people at celebration use so much of their language. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. Karen, we'll let you have the last word here. What are your thoughts going forward with this project?
I'm excited. I love progress. I love growth. As a dean, I'm excited for change. So I think this is excellent change. I think this is good progress. And I'm excited to continue to partner with Hune on future projects, including the Indigenous Studies BA, which I see continuing to grow and continuing to evolve. Also, I want to echo Hune when we thank Sea Alaska Heritage and our excellent partners there, like Lee and others who have really pushed us to make these classes free and to be in. We work with a Language Pathways grant with Sea Alaska Heritage that has really enabled us. That grant money has enabled us to be able to do this, because that partnership with them is, I think, really one of the main reasons we're able to do this.
All right, Gunashchish, everyone, thank you so much for being here with us today. Karen Silkaitis, Dean of UAS's Arts and Sciences Department. We also had Hune Lance Twitchell, Professor of Alaska Native Languages, and we also had Claire Strempel joining us here in this conversation from the KTOO News Department. And just a little bit of disclosure here. Claire and I, through KTOO, have been taking part in the Tlingit language class, and I am amazed at how much I've learned through Hune. How about you?
I'm also amazed. I think we should maybe sign up for more classes.
Well, what I'm hoping is that I can sign up for this class and kind of reinforce some of what I've learned, because I haven't been a model student. My language journey is maybe a little more challenging than most. So I look forward to this opportunity.
Well, Rhonda, I'll be in class with you because I'm signing up this fall.
All right. Well, Gunashchish, everyone. Thanks for joining us.